Fun Ideas Productions presents the Fun Ideas Podcast.
I'm having so much more fun now. I have let them show me how to live their way.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold, and welcome to Fun Ideas Podcast number 242. The Fun Ideas Podcast is brought to you in part by Freaky Magazine. I contribute material to every issue, so give it a try.
Hey kids, have you read Freaky? The magazine of weird humor for freaks like you. Freaky Magazine is a way-out collection of weirdo comics, kooky gags, photo funnies, social satire, and surreal collage. 52 pages of insanity in the tradition of magazines of yore like Cracked, Plop, and Zap. Special offer for Fun Ideas listeners, get a free sample copy in the mail, made of smelly newsprint and smudgy ink the old-fashioned way. Just message your mailing address to theslowpoisoner@gmail.com. That's theslowpoisoner@gmail.com while supplies last.
You remember them from your childhood. Casper the Friendly Ghost, Richie Rich, Hot Stuff, Baby Huey, Sad Sack and Little Audrey. You read them in comic books and saw them on television and in the movies. Now you can read about how they and other Harvey comic characters were created in two great books from Mark Arnold and Fun Ideas Productions, The Best of Harveyville Fun Times and The Harvey Comic Companion. Both are available from Amazon. The Companion is also available from Fair Manor Media. They are available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook versions. Order your copies today.
Friends, have you tried Lee's Comics? Lee's Comics is better than the leading comic book store. Wait a minute. Lee's Comics is the leading comic book store.
Based on arbitrary standards set by Lee Hester himself.
Lee's Comics was named as one of the 21 best online dealers by PopOptique.com. To shop the Lee's Comics eBay store, go to eBay and search for Lee's Comics, Inc. That's LEESCOMICSINC, period. Don't forget the period. Mention the Fun Ideas Podcast when you order, and you'll receive a free bonus gift. I plan to go on Charles F. Rosenay's Magical History Tour in 2024. And here is Charles to talk about it.
Hey, this is Charles Rosenay, sometime guest here on the Fun Ideas Podcast. Have you ever thought of taking a Beatles tour to Liverpool? Well, I host and organize the Magical History Tour every summer, www.liverpooltours.com. But I'm here to tell you about two other things. My books! Yes, Mark isn't the only author. I've recently published the book of Top 10 Beatles Lists, where 64 celebrities gave their top 10 favorite Beatles-themed lists with reasons why, and illustrations and photos and all kind of fun stuff. Please check it out, www.bookoftop10beatleslists.com. It's the follow-up to www.bookoftop10horrorlists.com, where 100 celebrities gave their favorite horror lists. Enjoy the upcoming show, and thank you for listening to my ad.
Buy your Christmas and holiday gifts now. Why not Stars of the Walt Disney Productions? Or how about Pac-Man, the first animated TV show based upon a video game? Or the revised and updated Looking for the Good Times Monkey book? Or one of 15 other books written by Mark Arnold? All are available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and most through Bear Manor Media. Unconditionally Mad and Not Just Happy Together are still being formatted, and both should see publication in 2024. I am currently at work on an article about Mr. Weatherby, and am working on my TV animation book, and another Monkey's book, and a book on Marvel's Crazy Magazine. More on that later. On today's show, we have one of the stars of the long-running TV series Lassie, and the author of Timmy's in the Well. Here he is, John Provost.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold with yet another episode of Fun Ideas Podcast. And today I have an actor who has done many movies and many TV shows, probably best known for the TV show Lassie. And his name is John Provost. How are you, sir?
Good. Doing great, Mark. Thanks.
All right. And wanted to get the plugs out of the way, but, you know, yeah. It's because I want to talk about it. Okay. So here's your book. I met you a few times over the years, but most recently, last August. And this is the updated version of Timmy's in the Well, the John Provost story by John Provost and Lori Jacobson, who's your wife.
Yes,
and
correct.
We had her, I'll plug her book too, recently on podcast for Top of the Mountain, the Beatles at Shea Stadium, 1965. That's in the archives, so if you want to listen and or watch that.
Now about that in the stadium, well, I did not see them at Shea, but I saw them at Dodger Stadium. And then actually saw them again at the Hollywood Bowl.
So, wow.
And both times you couldn't hear a thing, you know, because the girls were screaming. You could actually hear, that's not true. You could hear at the Hollywood Bowl because it was, you know, designed for that. But with them sitting out on home plate, right, with regular amplifiers, just that you would have, and small, like not, you know, not a wall, and then no sound system, and then nothing but...
so they went through the announcer speaker just like at Shea? They went through the announcer speaker just like at Shea?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah, because the technology hadn't happened yet, you know, so, you know, that it lagged, you know, a little bit behind, but, you know, it was crazy, but saw them.
Right, but also they didn't expect a big wow if Sandy Koufax ran out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing to me when I watch all the old films. Now, I became a Beatles fan in the late 70s, but I was aware of them. Too late to see him live because I was born in December of 66. But I did eventually see Paul, and I've seen him many times and Ringo many times. Chickened out to see George. I was going to fly to Japan, and then I said, oh, he's got a tour here. Of course, he never did.
Wow.
And I was kind of young when he toured in 74. I wasn't really a fan then, so did you see any of them solo over the years?
Paul, we've seen Paul numerous times, and then of course, you know, the all-star Ringo,
but never actually George on the 74 tour or Lennon even on one of his few concert appearances.
But that would have been insane. Would have really been special for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, at least you saw the group together. Did you hear anything at all? You know, because you watch the films, you watch the Shea Stadium film. And of course, I think they did some overdubs and everything and, you know, sweetened it and everything. And
well, evidently they couldn't even hear themselves.
Yeah.
You know, with their monitor speakers or whatever they are. I mean,
yeah.
And they couldn't hear what was coming out. And they were just, you know, evidently half of the time just goofing around. You know?
Yeah. I think it was Ringo who said, you know, all I could do is watch their asses and see what they were doing.
Well, there you go. Then now we know.
Anyway, okay. Let's see.
So that was my Beatle experience.
Yeah, that's your Beatle experience.
Of course, listen to it every day.
So I read through your book. I read through your original version. And then this version, you know, has been updated, obviously.
Right.
Is the only reason to update it because you decided to do it in a larger size, or was there other reasons for updating?
Well, a lot of time had transpired. I mean, obviously, the original was 08. And quite a bit of things have changed, you know, family-wise, business-wise, you know, everything. So people were so interested in, you know, the story before. Well, this was just a continuation of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, and we it goes on. It goes on, for sure.
Right. And in reading the book, you kind of write it like a diary. Now, did you keep a diary? I didn't catch that throughout the thing.
No, but that technique Lori came up with. I mean, you know, mine was all memories. Yeah. I mean, I'm dyslexic, so, you know, I did not keep a diary. I mean, well, if I had, I would have been able to read it, but, during my college years and stuff like that, I did keep journals and what have you. But mainly it was just, you know, me talking to Lori and her dragging things out of me and putting them down that way. But, the unique way that it was put together, it's kind of like, you look at what was going on and it triggers what was going on with you, you know, at that time in your life, right, or whatever. And it just, you know, everybody that's read it loved it.
Yeah. One thing I liked is how you tied in other things that went concurrently with, say, Lassie, you know, like, and of course, a lot of your friends were on those shows, like the Donna Reed Show or My Three Sons. And oh, yeah, you're still, yeah, friends with some of them now. I mean, you can name names, of course.
A couple weekends ago, as a matter of fact, a couple weekends ago, we were with Butch Patrick, who was Eddie Munster.
Right.
Yeah. And Keith Thibodeau, who was Little Ricky on, you know, I Love Lucy. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Mathers, the Beaver.
Yes.
I mean, come on, you know, so yeah, life goes on.
Now, do you hang out with all these various people socially or just when you get together for like various events and stuff like that?
Well, you know, truthfully, from even back in the day when we were kids, mm-hmm, it was mostly when we would see each other at an event or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did socialize a little bit, but not like, you know, buddy buddies.
Right.
It's really kind of strange, but it, I don't know, maybe it's kind of like, you know, visiting friends from a fraternity or something, because we cannot see each other for years, a couple years, 5 years. And then boom, it's like, hey, I saw you yesterday and, right, you know, hey, we're both okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went through, you know, because we all have so much stuff that we can share that we all did.
Right.
You know, we all kind of grew up in the business, but different parts of the business, have you. Mm-hmm. A couple people I, you know, have kept a lot closer with. Jay North is one who was Dennis the Menace. Yeah.
Right.
Jay, Jay's a great guy. Stan and the Livingstons, as a matter of, yeah, fact, yeah, well, Barry, he introduced Lori and I, and, you know, we're coming on 25 years now. So, so I guess, yeah, we do keep in touch with each other.
Right. I did a book on Dennis the Menace, and I originally was not going to cover the TV show. It was mainly covering comic books. And then I said, you know, I should do a whole survey on this and do the comic strip and everything. And so I eventually did the Jay North Show. And okay, you probably know this gentleman, Stu Shostak. He helped me out. I didn't actually interview Jay.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because he did a great interview. And I said, well, I'll just crib things. And then Jeannie Russell, who's also a friend of yours, you know, yeah, contributed some things and everything. But one thing is Jay always acted like on his commentary that he really was sheltered when, you know, you did those events like parades or whatever back then and didn't socialize at all with the rest of you that much. It wasn't until later, you know, when you got to be adults. Is that true?
Yeah. And that, unfortunately, you know, that wasn't his choosing.
Yeah.
You,
yeah,
know,
that's what, so, I gathered too.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, yeah, that's unfortunate. And he, yeah, had to pay for that, yeah, you know, but yeah, Jay and I mean, we went to, you know, most of us kids, old acting kids, you know, we didn't go to regular school. We went to private schools or, mm-hmm, or had tutors, you know, because we were working. And Jay and I did go to, when we weren't filming, mm-hmm, to private schools together. So, you know, we even saw each other like that. And I think that's why, you know, Jay and I don't know, just, you know, became a lot closer mm-hmm, that reason. And Jay's mom, he didn't have father in the picture.
Right.
His mom was really close to my mom. Mm. And yeah, I know they were both into early health foods and, you know, making carrot juice, drinking carrot juice. And, you know, just when like, hey, yeah, it is good. some of the things that they told us back then that we thought were pretty corny turned out to be not so corny.
So going back to you, I'm sure you've been asked this a zillion times, and some things I have to ask again, but even if I read it in the book, I'm just kind of curious about it. It's like, as a child, I never really got that acting bug, you know, but I always like watching old TV shows and movies since birth, pretty much. What gave you that acting bug or desire to be on a show?
Wow. it was...
Excuse me.
It was how I grew up. You know, the first thing I did, I was not quite 3 years old. And, you know, I really, that wasn't a cognitive decision on my part, you know. And then, you know, that was so big with Jane Wyman and Sterling Hayden. And my mom grew up in Texas and her idol was Jane Wyman. And she thought if she took me on this interview, you know, with over 200 little kids, all she wanted was Jane Wyman's autograph. You know, she had not a clue. She didn't have anything. And I, over all these kids, I got the job. Now, I must have had that, whatever it was that they needed, you know, the suits, you know, and I did, you know, what they told me to do. And I was cute. And so that I fit the whole picture.
Yeah.
So I just kind of grew up. I just grew up doing it.
Yeah.
The only time, and you know, I never had any real acting lessons. It just was like an osmosis type thing. You know, it just happened. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know,
I did not like stage. I did not like that part of acting. Film, you know, televisions, movies, even some live television, but it wasn't like a play, you know, plays,
right.
which is great. I mean, oh my God, you know, the people that do it are incredible. And a lot of people can do all of it, you know, do stage, do Hollywood. But I think it's just, that's how I grew up. I grew up with the Hollywood thing. I didn't grow up in New York, which was stage and film, and then some people came out here. But it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you're doing something and it's fun, and you're making money too, you know, and you're enjoying, and other people are enjoying or getting pleasure from what you're doing, then go for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier that you're dyslexic. Did that hinder you, or was there no issue with that as far as memorizing lines, lines?
So I never thought it was an issue, but other people thought it was an issue. As a matter of fact, when I started on Laughing, I was 5 years, seven years old, and couldn't read, and I couldn't really spell. I couldn't, Life magazine, you know, big Life magazine that came out. I don't know if it was once a week or once a month, but yeah,
everybody bought
magazine. They did a whole expose on me, this little 7-year-old kid that's going to be starring, working with Lassie, you know, for the next 7 years. Can't read or write. He has a mental block.
Oh boy.
Yeah, right. So I had to live with that for a while. Until they figured out what it was, and they came up with the name, the term dyslexia. And so, as a matter of fact, when I was working on Lassie, the producers, the Rathers, Benita Granville and Jack Rather, they sent me once a week to UCLA. They had in their education department there, they had a special section where they were working on kids like me. And trying to, you know, figure out everything. And so I remember going there once a week for 2 or 3 hours or something like that. So, you know, it hindered me in a lot of ways, I think. Yes, you know, I can, you know, I spell it phonetically and I flip numbers sometimes. So I just have to be really careful. And now I ask Siri how to spell it. So, and most
all that work for naught.
I know. A lot of times it turns out okay, but a lot of times it doesn't. So,
right.
It is what it is.
But again, back in those days, did you just memorize scripts, or you didn't have a lot of lines, right? Or
I did. And you know, later on, I could read, and I can do. I mean, I can read. I can read a book now. I can, you know, I can do all that. But mainly, it's the spelling. It's just not good. It's okay.
As someone who doesn't have that, it's hard for me to fathom. Oh, it's you weird. Know, I used to be like Mr. Spelling Bee and stuff like that.
Oh, so it's man, like... you guys, I never understood you guys, and especially English. I mean, English is such a hard language. Yeah. But to get back to your question. My mother would read me my lines the night before, mm-hmm. and I would memorize them. And it was, we would, on Lassie, it was, we worked, 5 days a week, 10 hours a day, 9 months out of the year. That's what I did. Mm-hmm. And so we did a half hour show and three and a half days of filming. Mm-hmm. And so we would go through about 10 to maybe 15 pages an evening.
Wow.
And Timmy was almost always in it. You know, right. He didn't have any really long, you know, two page, you know, of dialogue.
Speech.
It turned out I really developed a good memory for that. And back then it worked really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
interesting, because when I was a kid, I did try out some acting and stuff like that, and I did some school plays and stuff, but man, it was difficult for me to learn lines. And I think nowadays I'd probably do better at, I memorize things a lot better than I used to, but maybe I just was hung up when I was a kid.
I mean, a lot of actors, I mean, what I was it some of the older actors, John Wayners or Brando or somebody, wouldn't memorize their lines.
Yeah.
Couldn't. And like the other actors had to have them written on their faces or something, you know, different placement, kind of like cue cards, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day, which, you know, we didn't use cue cards at all. The only thing was when Lassie would bark, you know, and whoever it was, it could be, you know, the parent or a stranger, they knew what Lassie was saying when Lassie barked.
Right.
But the only reason they knew that was because it was in the script.
Got it.
You know, the dog,
but
really
as a dumb kid, I guess, you know, I used to think, you know, everybody's so great doing this acting, they know all their lines, but you know, I never thought about that people had cue cards or people were fed lines or people just made it up, you know.
Well, and that happens too, you know, and you know, it depends. You got to be really up there if you're gonna you know, do it off the cuff.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about a few of the films you did prior to Lassie, and, you know, just kind of, I'll say So Big, since you discussed that.
Don't remember a thing about it.
You don't remember even Jane Wyman?
And I had a line in So Big. I did.
Yeah.
I did. She asked, how big's my baby? And I said, so big. You know, so anyway, the first two movies I don't recall. The second movie was Country Girl with Bing Crosby and Grace Kelly.
Okay.
Don't remember a thing about either one of those.
So how old were you? Yeah.
Well, I was like, not quite three in So Big.
Oh, okay. All right.
And in The Country Girl, I was probably maybe three and a half, maybe four.
Okay.
The only thing spectacular about that movie was that I was killed. I was run over. I was run. Yeah, Bing Crosby let me loose on the street because he was a photo op.
Right.
And I ran in front of a truck and got run over, which you never saw. You just heard it. But that was the only time that I ever died or was killed or anything. So
yeah, but even since
I don't remember. After that, three, four, five, six, you know, the different movies I do recall.
Okay. So would the next one be like He Laughed Last, the Blake Edwards film?
That was right in the same time. And that one I don't really have a lot of memory. The ones that I do would be All Mine to Give, or The Day They Gave Babies Away. I think now it's called All Mine to Give.
Okay.
That one with Glennis Johns, I do remember a little on that. Then Back from Eternity with Rod Steiger and you know, just Ed Clark and Beulah Bondi. I mean, oh, it had an incredible. And that one, oh boy, I really remember that. I had a birthday, and I remember they gave me a metal Japanese robot, you know, and this was like, you know, like 54 or something, or 55.
Yeah.
I'd love to have that today. Who knows what happened to it? But no, that one, but you said you had one that you had a question about?
Well, I was just kind of curious, you know, with some of the actors, but I think you did say in the book on that Back from Eternity that you did remember Anita Ekberg.
Oh, yeah. You know, so, I mean, I was, kudos, you know, to you. I was a little kid, and she was this, and my mother's blonde, you know, but she was like twice the size of my mother and beautiful and blonde. And, you know, it was just all these other actors. There was no other kids. Yeah. And, you know, she immediately befriended me and I was always on her lap or, you know, in her arms. And a couple of days after that, we started, some of the crew guys came up and said, "Hey, we'll give you $5 to trade places." You know, I didn't know. I had not a clue. I didn't take the money, though. I knew a good thing.
For a child back then as an actor, I mean, were you treated similarly from job to job, movie to movie, or was it completely different night and day every time you went on a different shoot?
I think it was pretty much the same.
Okay.
The big difference is when you have a series, because that's different.
Right.
You know, you hope it's going to be a long-term thing. A movie, you know, you're a couple months, a month, a week. You know, it depends what your part is and how large it is. But no, you're always, treated the same. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm sure they had rules even back then, you know, that, you know, you can't do this, you can't work 20 hours a day and blah, blah,
oh,
blah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's really good you brought that up, because not only were there the child labor laws that they had to follow, and the educational laws and all that. Well, then the studio or the producers, they had their own laws that you had to follow, which could be like, say you liked a horseback ride. They could say, "Nope, you can't horseback ride anymore, because that could be really dangerous and you could fall off and break your leg. And then that's going to shut production down, blah, blah, blah. You can't go surfing because that's dangerous. Oh, you can't skateboard. You can't ride a motorcycle." You know, I mean, all these things. And when you think about it, it's really true. I mean, I just, boom, came to mind. One of a ball player was out riding, you know, his ATV somewhere and flipped it and, you know, threw out his shoulder. And I can't play ball. And, you know, they have, you know, World Series they're going to play.
So,
yeah, it really can mess everybody up. So, yeah, you got all kinds of rules. And, you know, but like every rule, everybody tries to break them or whatever.
Right, right. During your entire career, I mean, I'm sure you did some stunts, but you probably had a stand-in and things for various things.
Had stunt. As a matter of fact, Stan Livingston, who introduced Laurie and I from My Three Sons, went way, way before. On one of my very first Lassie episodes, I was supposed to be in a pond. And and they didn't want to put me in there because it was dangerous. So they actually, Stan Livingston was my double, and another kid was my double, and he had some trouble. He was a champion swimmer. That's why they hired him. But like he said, the water below the water, it was muddy, and they told him to go under the water and then come up. And he went down, and his feet got stuck in the mud. He finally made it out. But and then now one time it was very end of the series. Lassie, the series, kind of invented the continued next week,
right?
In episodes. And we had done a three-parter three consecutive weeks. That was really, it was my favorite of 249 half hour episodes. My favorite. Mm-hmm. It's called The Odyssey, but everything we did was black and white. Mm-hmm. At the very end, they decided to do a five parter in Technicolor. Mm-hmm. We were always CBS. CBS was, you know, the last of the big three. NBC went color. And following year, ABC went color. And then finally, CBS did. So anyway, what they did was, it was a Technicolor film, a TV series that they were going to put together and release as a movie, which they did.
Right.
There was a scene in there with Lassie and I. We're stranded, you know, up in the Sierras, and we build a raft. Timmy builds a raft, and we're supposed to go down the stream and, you know, get saved. But the raft is supposed to break apart. Lassie and I get thrown into the rapids, and we get separated, and that's, you know, part of the story. Well, they couldn't use a stunt person because they had to see my face.
Right.
And they didn't have CGI. There was no way they could. Yeah, and they had the same with Lassie.
Right.
You know, Lassie was a very special looking dog, only one. And so they had to, they used the real Lassie. Well, mm-hmm. not only was that not the best thing, but we couldn't rehearse it.
Mm.
They knew what was going to happen. It was, they had multiple cameras. That was a first. And we started down the rapids, and they had it set up that the raft at a certain point would break apart, and we got thrown into the water. Well, for Lassie, they had three men in wetsuits, two men in wetsuits to jump in and save Lassie. This was on New Year's Day in the Sierras. The water, it was, you know, like it was the Sonora River. It was freezing. And so I had on a wetsuit underneath my clothing, mm-hmm. which was, a you know, hiking boots, you know, a wool jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that all didn't work when I hit the water. So, yeah.
Wow.
So I hit the water, hit a big boulder. It knocked all the air out of me. You know, I was kind of going down. I came up, and I'm gasping and doing the whole thing. Well, the director's thinking, oh, man, this kid's really gonna get an Emmy for this performance. Well, I was really
while you're dying.
I was really in trouble. So my stunt double, who was a man, Whitey Hughes, he was a champion swimmer, he saw the issue. Well, when they had a rope, Mark, they had a rope tied across the river that I was supposed, when we finally left the last camera, I was supposed to jump up and grab, you know, and then get to shore. Well, I was out of it. I went right under that rope. I was just going down the river. So Whitey jumps in, gets me, gets us both back, gets me up to the shore, and everything's good. And at the end of the day, the director walked over to Whitey and gave him $100 bill and said, thanks.
You know? Wow.
He realized that he saved, you know, the star kid from the series.
Right.
So yeah, I had stunt double some, and so that one worked out really great. But yeah, mm-hmm. you know, you never know. I enjoyed doing my own stunts. I wanted to, mm-hmm. you know, as a 10, 12, 14 year old kid.
Yeah.
Hey, it's funny. You see the guys falling off the hill and off the roof and all this, and I wanted to do it. And so they did let me do some stuff, but if it was, you know, any chance you'd get hurt,
right.
Not really.
Now, how many episodes did you do per season?
34, 36.
Yeah. Because it seems like, yeah, when it's a show that has a kid on it, like Dennis the Menace, they shot way more episodes than, say, you know, I don't know, Gilligan's Island or something. Well, even then, you know, it's like, but, you know, a lot of the other shows were like 28, 26, 24, you know, and, you know, it,
you
seems
know,
like.
Yeah. You know, that people think it's like, oh my, you know, because today, you know, what, 10, 12
yeah, streaming is like eight.
And you can, yeah. if you're, you know, you can wait and watch them all in one night. You
right.
know? Where back then you had to be there on Sunday, you know, on Channel 2 with the family, with your one TV in the house.
Right.
You know, it was black and white and watch.
Big.
So, yeah. And, you know, run up and change the channel, kid.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it was a whole different, and we didn't have a clue that you know, 50, well, more than that now, later, people are still watching all our shows, all those old shows. Mm-hmm. You know, Lassie's still on in over 50 countries. It's on a dozen, you know, cable networks around here, sometimes at 3 in the morning, you know, with, you know, Gilligan's Island. And you mentioned Gilligan's Island. Hugh Riley, who played my father on the show for 6 years, after Lassie, he was offered the part of the professor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And he turned it down. He turned it down because, number one, he wanted to spend more time with his young kids. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, like I said, I work 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. The other thing was, he said he thought it was silly.
Yeah.
Well, it was.
Yeah. Well, even people who took it, you know, Tina Louise and Natalie Schaefer, they didn't want to do it either. You know, but they took it. They said, oh, it's a nice trip to Hawaii.
And they probably thought, oh, it'll never sell. We'll do a pilot and it'll never sell. Yeah, exactly. But boy, were they wrong.
Yeah. And I love that show too. So, hey, together. Whatever. Yeah,
exactly.
Sorry you had to suffer for my entertainment value, but hey, you know. Now, Lassie was obviously already established. I mean, you know, the basic history, anybody can look it up. It was a film first. It had Elizabeth Taylor, and, you know, then there was a later one.
Roddy McDowell.
Roddy McDowell, and then it became the TV series. And Tommy Reddick was the first star with it, right?
Yeah. Right, Jeff.
Now, Miller. The reason why they switched to you, he was getting, like, long in the tooth, as it were, and they wanted a younger kid, or he was just tired of doing it?
Tommy wanted out.
Okay.
He was moving on. He was 17 years old. They started when he was 14, and they realized, you know, okay, let's get a little kid in there, and and he'll grow up on the show. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, how they got me.
Yeah.
And the way I was picked for that part, I was doing a movie for RKO in Japan, 1956. It was one of the first American movies filmed after the war, 11 years after we, you know, destroyed that place. Last movie RKO was making, before he was selling, Howard Hughes was selling to Desi and Lucy.
Right.
He still owned TWA, Transworld Airlines. So we took the crew, equipment, all the equipment, the cast and everybody, and we took a big constellation and flew. It took over a day. We had 3 stops. We stopped in Hawaii, Guam, Wake, and then landed in Tokyo. And I was 6 years old. And oh man, I remember a lot about that.
Yeah.
It was insane. It was so much fun. Spent a little over 3 months there. Well, while I was there, they were looking for a kid to be the Timmy on Lassie. Okay. Couldn't find the kid, evidently. And so the story I have is the woman's whose husband was doing a movie. Well, okay, so they were looking for the kid. They couldn't find the kid. And so she was having lunch with the wife that the husband was doing our movie in Japan. She said, oh, it sounds like we have the kid you're looking for. He's in Japan. So when I got back from Japan, and they said seen some of the dailies, so they said, yeah, okay, that's the kid we want. They looked at some of the old movies. That's Timmy. So I didn't have to audition for the part. What I did have to do was audition with Lassie to see how got along. Yeah. You know, if the dog didn't like me, it wouldn't work. And I grew up around, at the time, We lived in Pomona, which is about 60 miles east of L.A. And my sister had a horse. I had a pony. We had a goat, you know, dogs and cats and pigeons. We had all kinds of stuff. So I was very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. So, but they wanted to make sure that Lassie and I got along. So I went and lived for a long weekend, 3 days, with Rudd Weatherwax on his ranch. And to see how Lassie and I got along.
Now, which Lassie was it? Lassie Jr. That one.
This was the old man, which would be
Pal's
son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Pal's son. Okay. Pal only did the movies.
Okay.
Then his son took and threw this in them. A few years ago, I found this out, and it's true. I have copies. There was the Lassie radio show.
Yes, like I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I never knew about that. Yeah. And I got, I was at a
Jack Rather knew how to market his characters.
Oh, man. That, you know, Vince, isn't that something? Yeah. So the movies, then the radio show, and then the TV show. Yeah. Well, so yeah, that was the old man. And we got along great. He was a great dog. Mm-hmm. And I ended up working with him for 1 year.
Okay.
Then worked with a couple other.
And then you said that you worked with Baby and it was for 5 years and it was your favorite.
Baby was, yeah, my last from when I was 9 to 14. Same dog. We grew up together. I learned so much from him. And you know, he was just, I loved that dog. And he loved me. And I mean, we did it. We ate together. We slept together. We played together. We did everything together. Yeah. And even on weekends, I sometimes would go home with Rudd and spend the weekend at his ranch, you know, out in the valley. It was good for me to get away from L.A. He had a pond and stuff. I could fish and whatever and play with the dogs. You know, it was a great bonding thing, but it was, I loved it. Yeah, Baby was.
And then the third one you mentioned, Spook.
Spook was Baby's father.
Got it.
He was in between the old man and Baby.
Got it. Okay.
He wasn't looking out. He just didn't have it. Hey, you never know, right?
Yeah.
Rudd would breed, you know, he'd have 50 puppies before he got one that, you know, was a male. It had to be a male, had to look, have the markings, and then hopefully it's, you know, going to turn out good. So,
yeah,
so Spook didn't work so long. We played with him for about a year and a half, and then Baby took over because he was really young.
And it's basically a good dog would be one that takes direction well and can be endearing and think on its
and
feet as it
were.
All as
the dog. Stuff that yeah. goes yeah. on, yeah. you know, and that yeah. that's kind of what happened to Spook. He was okay, but we had a scene. It was June Lockhart, myself, and Lassie,
yeah.
and it was set up where the camera was moving towards us on a dolly. Well, people don't realize back then the equipment was very big and very heavy. Mm-hmm. And so two men on this dolly with the camera probably weighed, you know, 2,500 pounds or something. And then a man controlling it. Well, he lost control of the dolly. It came towards us, came off its tracks, knocked over a light, which almost hit the dog. Nobody got a hit or hurt. Mm-hmm. Almost hit him and really spooked him. So anytime we were set up in a scene that was similar to that, he'd start shaking. And so it just happened. It was unfortunate. You know, it wasn't planned.
Now, when you got Lassie at that time, were you looking for a series or is this just another
job?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Not even thinking about it. Okay. Everything just kind of happened. And I'm a real strong believer of being in the right place at the right time.
Right. And now, were you aware of the series with Tommy already?
Oh, yeah. I watched it as a kid.
Okay.
You know? I was really young. You know, I was, you know, 7 years old, 6 years old, but I remember Lassie. Yeah.
Okay.
But never thought I'd be there.
Yeah.
that was the great part. And Tommy, he was 10 years my senior.
Right.
So when we did work together for a half a season.
Right.
But we didn't have any kind of bonding because, you know, 10 years is a big difference. And I'm a little kid and he's 17, right? He's got his sights are somewhere else.
Well, especially if he wanted to move on from the series anyway.
Oh,
so,
yeah. You know. But later on, after my college years and stuff, we hooked up again.
Yeah.
And we became pretty close in a different way, a distance.
Right.
And so, but the funny thing was, I had this deal with him. Every time we got together, whether it be on the phone or, you know, in person, the last thing I'd do is if I was in person, I'd shake his hand or over the phone and say, thanks for the dog, Jeff, because he gave me Lassie. You know, that's how he left the series. So right. I always thanked him. And he was a great guy. You know, he passed away really, really young. Very sad. Very, very smart guy. Yeah. Really smart guy.
Well, he got into computers and stuff, right?
He was. Bill Gates had just contacted him about 3 weeks before he had his heart attack, and said he wanted him to come up to Washington and be part of his inner circle.
Wow.
So, yeah, you got to be pretty smart in the computers. You know, I can barely use my phone. And look what we're doing. Wow, this is great.
Yeah, hey, technology works
yeah,
here.
It works. Right. No, I love it. Yeah.
Actually, I love it that we can do these pretty easy. Yeah. Like the old days, you had to fly to LA and visit you and blah, 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 which I can do, but you know, it's easier to do it this way.
You got now,
Once you got Lassie, I mean, you know, the appearances were like endless. I'll mention a few, and if you want to stop me and say, I'll talk about that one.
Okay.
Like the Jack Benny Show, the Tennessee Ernie Ford Show. And you were on numerous parades. You're like in every parade under the sun.
Well, you know, we Lassie was the Grand Marshal of the Grand Marshal, I believe. Well, twice in the Rose Parade.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's, you know, like the biggest parade on the West Coast. And, you know, the parades were great. We got to, you know, do some very little teeny small town parades too. You know, the big ones, the little ones. Those were always fun. And being guests, the Jack Benny Show, that was a real quick, the show is actually great. It's like he would always start his show by walking out on stage in front of the screen, in a big theater. And he's doing his business, and Lassie comes running behind him across the stage, and he's like, what's this? And then he gets back into his thing. Now here comes Timmy trying to get his dog, and he grabbed starts talking to me, and then he's trying to get me to join his fan club for 25 cents. And I'm saying, well, and then Lassie comes out and saves me,
seen that before. And it's very fun.
Tennessee Ernie Ford Show, I think I did that a couple times.
Really
nice, you know, warm people. I don't think I worked with anybody that, you know, was.
Well, you worked with all these people that I loved as a kid. I loved Jack Benny as a kid. And I was only 7 years old when he died. And I was like, so sad. I was like, oh, I like him. Tennessee Ernie Ford, I had a record that was the pea picker's story is how the Jolly Green Giant got his ho ho ho. And it's just a little record I had, and I fell in love with him. And then I'd see like old episodes of I Love Lucy and then his own show and stuff like that. I'm like, oh wow, I love all these guys, and you worked with all of them.
It's funny, you know, there's a new generation out there that we were in a unique time because television was really new. You know, a lot of people didn't have TVs when we were on. Things changed. Things and the stories, whether it's, you know, comedy or a Western or you know, a drama, they had a lot of substance to them. Mm. Where today I think it's a lot of flash. You know, it's what people want, but it shows the quality that all of these shows had, that they're still on and people are still watching them, and they're creating little networks that just show, you know, those shows. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, none of us get anything for that. But you know, that's okay. That's the way it goes. You know, there's other ways and other things. So, and it goes on. It's like, during COVID, we get a phone call. Lori gets a call, for these guys are doing a science fiction movie. Oh, I've never done a science fiction. And so it turned out I was a voice of a robot in the science. I'm Spark the robot. You remember you had Castaway with Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
And he had his friend Wilson.
Yeah. The
ball. That's kind of like Volleyball. Spark. He floats. He's around. Oh, kind of robot. And you know, I never got to do that. But if the phone rings and things happen, June Lockhart, worked with June for 6 years. When she left the farm, she got lost in space and then came back to reality on, you know, Petticoat Junction and a million other things. And a great lady who is still with us at 98 years old told me one thing when I was really little. I was kind of precocious when she got, you know, she wasn't my first mom. My first mom on Lassie was Cloris Leachman.
Yeah.
And she did not want that part. She
said,
I'm not baking cookies, you guys. And so they replaced her with June Lockhart and the husband, John Shepard, with Hugh Riley. So I was like kicking her under the table, you know, doing something. And she took me aside. And June was, I think back then, she was like maybe her late 20s or something. She wasn't that old. So, but she sits me down and she goes, now listen, young man, we're going to be working together for 6 years and you're a professional and I'm a professional. And so you act like a professional and play a nice little boy and stop this stuff. And someday you'll be old like me and you'll play. I know, but you know, when you're a year old, she's mommy, she's old. She said, someday you'll be playing an old person. And yeah, it's what happens. You know? And like I said, I never knew, I never saw it coming.
I had the pleasure of meeting both of them, both Cloris and June, at various events over the years and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
totally different.
I could see why Cloris wouldn't enjoy it. I mean, she was more in her element with, like, we're watching a revival of Young Frankenstein. She was more in her element of that. She was more in her element in Mary Tyler Moore's show. So I get it. You know, it's like, with June, she was just, you know, even, you know, it was like 20 years ago, I guess, but, you know, it was at the BAMMY Awards, and she had to introduce Third Eye Blind. And she asked me, she goes, who's Third Eye Blind? And I had to explain who it was because, it's these young whippersnapper groups, you know, whatever, you know, it's like, you know, even she was like Beatles and stuff.
That is so neat that you got to participate in that.
Yeah,
oh, wow. Because I'm living about an hour from San Francisco up north and never did go to during, because that's when I was going to college, you know, I guess. But what, do you remember what year?
It was before 2005. I probably did I used to hang around with this friend named Dane Andrew that we used to do video shoots and celebrity interviews and stuff. And we would get into various events. And the BAMMYs, we did a few years in a row. One time it was in Oakland. One time, and that the year I met June was in San Francisco. It's got to be late 90s, like 98, 99, something around there.
I wish I had gone to one, because I know she loved that stuff.
She was very down to earth, but she was kind of blunt, you know. It's like, and she's a little salty in her tongue too, but you know, it's like, yeah, because hey, I'm not Timmy's mom right now. I can
that's
say
right.
Like,
no, you know, no, but, and you know, you know, listen, June. Come on, amazing woman, you know, just amazing. Yeah. And God bless her.
Yeah. And my friend Dane only knew her from Lost in Space. And I go, come on, you never watched Lassie? And he goes, no, not really. And I was like, Now, granted, I only saw Lassie in reruns, but still, when I was a kid, I haven't said all this. It's like, you know, I fell in love with Collie Dog too. I Wish I Was You. I had this little Whitman book that had your photo on the cover. I'm sure you've seen it, a little hardback. And, you know, it was in my bookshelf for years. It's like, oh, you know, and everything like that. Finally got a dog. My mom was terrified of dogs, so we never had one when I was a kid. She'd buy me she bought me a stuffed collie dog. And it's like, well, not the same thing. And like, yeah, I see behind you, you have like a little statuette of Lassie. Yeah. Things like that. You know, I'd have stuff like that, but never a real dog until now. Dogs in the other room. It's not a collie, it's a terrier, but you know, it's small, but still, it's nice to finally have a dog.
Love the dog.
So you've done the show for 7 years. Did you have the same Tommy Rettig experience saying, I gotta get out of here? Or was it just kind of winding down anyway? Or
no, the show was going on. When I initially signed with them, it was a 7-year contract with a 3-year option. And the option was hours. I mean, I could continue or not. And so my parents, they didn't care. And you know, I said, I'm tired of being, look, I'm 14 years old. I'm starting to, you know, go through puberty. I'm, looking at the girls and stuff. And but everybody thinks of me as little Timmy with Lassie. I wanted to get out of that image. So yeah. I told my parents, I said, no, I don't want to go on for 3 more years. And they said, great. Well, the owner who owned, he owned Sergeant Preston, The Lone Ranger, and Lassie, those three, three TV series, Jack Rather. Mm-hmm. Well, along with his wife, Benita Granville, as she was our executive producer. Well, he also owned Chris Craft Boats. And so, plus, you know, a lot of other things. So he offered, one of the perks, they said, one of my things was, I didn't have enough time off in the summer, which I didn't, because we worked 9 months. The 10th month was all publicity stuff with me and Lassie. And then the 2 months I was off, I was doing all kinds of other stuff. So I wanted some time. They said, okay, we'll give you time. And I really didn't care. But then he offered me a big boat. And I, what is a kid gonna, what is a 14-year-old gonna do with a, you know, 35-foot boat? I mean, seriously, it's not gonna work. So I quit. I said no. And I, you know, I told my parents, but I still wanted to act. I still wanted to do stuff. Right after Lassie, I did a couple of Mr. Eds.
Yeah.
Which was great. Arthur Lubin, the director, was the same director of the movie I did in Japan. So Escapade in Japan.
Right.
In 1956. And so did a couple of those, which was great. And, you know, but sorry, you know, Ed doesn't really talk. You know, it's the trainer. He does a little thing with him, you know, but that was fun. And then I did the first movie, which was a total change from Timmy, was the one for This Property is Condemned with Robert Redford and Natalie Wood for Paramount. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it was a dark Tennessee Williams play but Mary Badham played Natalie Wood's younger sister, and she was a scout in To Kill a Mockingbird. And so we were really the only two kids. It was a lot of fun. We filmed it down in Mississippi and Louisiana. And then I did a movie that nobody has ever seen.
I know you mentioned this.
It's called Secret of the Sacred Forest. I'm looking up here at the wall. There's a big poster of it.
And even I haven't heard of it. I mean, most of the movies you mentioned, I've seen or heard of, at least.
Gary Merrill, you know, the actor. It was his final movie.
Yeah.
We filmed it in the Philippines. We spent about over 3 months there. Loved it. This was 1956. 57. Loved it, had a great time, but terrible movie. And then I come back to the States and I get a Disney movie with Kurt Russell.
Now, I love this movie.
Computer War Tennis Shoes.
Yes.
So here's, it was really a lot of fun. I'd never worked with Disney. And all the different, the crew, all the fun, everybody, you know, Cesar Romero. I mean, they had everybody. It was great. So Kurt had his birthday while we were filming, and I had mine. We're only a few days apart. Mm-hmm. We're both Pisces. Mm-hmm. And we're having lunch, and I'm talking to Kurt, and he's talking about baseball. He's, you know, really into ball. Mm-hmm. And I go, you know, Kurt, I said, I've been working 15 years. It's my 18th birthday. I think I should maybe take a break. And Kurt says, yeah, I think you should take a break. Well, Mark, it was kind of a mistake. I mean, it wasn't, but it was. I mean, you know, it was okay. So I said, yeah, you're right. And so I told my parents, I said, nah, I'm out. And they said, okay, well, now you're graduated from high school. So now you go to college. Okay, yeah. That's what I'm going to do. Well, unbeknownst to me, my character Bradley in Computer was going to be in 2 more movies with Kurt. Right. Nope, didn't do it. You know, so okay. That's when I, you know, if I had known, I probably would have. I would no. I know I would. I would have stayed and done those two more movies. You know, yeah. It would just been
because I love those three movies. Year. I know people have written about it and stuff like that, and I always jokingly, but I'm not really that jokingly. Is when people write, "What's your favorite movie trilogy?" And people usually put Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, you know, Indiana yeah. Jones, Rocky, whatever. And I always put the Dexter Riley films, and then they go, "Oh yeah, those are great." You know, it's like because you know, it's like it had some stupid gimmick. But oh, I think yeah. what made it work typical, is just the cast. It was like, you know.
Typical Disney, you know, movie.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad they stopped genre. At three. I'm glad yeah. they stopped at three because, you know, Joe Flynn had died, unfortunately. And, you know, Kurt Russell, he was obviously having his own growing pains. Like, I got to get out of here, you yeah. know.
And, hey, listen, we all go through it. We all do it, you know, and yeah. we all have to move on and do different things. You know, yeah. so I take off. I end up, well, I started to go to school down in Southern Cal, but a girlfriend from high school was going to school up north. And so I would travel on a weekend and visit, and I thought, oh, this is great. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to transfer next semester, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and back then they had PSA Airlines had, it was called the Midnight Express. You could fly for $10 from Los wow. Angeles to San Francisco and $20 round trip. Yeah. It was great. Did that. But so I ended up transferring up here. We broke up. I continued with school and said, I like it. And I stayed mm-hmm. and then get a phone call from a friend in LA. And this is like 97, 98. And he says, hey, they're going to be doing a new Lassie series. And I said, oh, you're kidding. I haven't heard about that. And he goes, yeah, this producer, Al Burton, over at Universal is talking about it. So I call up Al Burton and say, hey, Al, John Provost here, you know, from the original Lassie series. I hear you're doing a new show. He goes, John Provost? He goes, I didn't even know you were still around, you know.
Thanks.
He goes, well, I just want to tell you this right now. I'm not going to use anybody from the old series. I said, okay, that's not a problem. What about behind the scenes? What about as a consultant or writing or something? And he goes, oh, okay, that sounds good. Why don't you come? We'll have lunch. Mm-hmm. So I drive down to LA. We have lunch, a long lunch at Universal. And at the end, he goes, you know something? I think you can be on screen. He goes, but you're not Timmy. I go, okay, yeah, this ain't gonna work, you know. So anyway, I meet everybody else, Christopher Stone and you know, D Stone, D Wallace and you know, the kids, and we all hit it off. And I was the uncle, but I wasn't really Timmy, and then I was Timmy, but I was adopted, so my name's not Timmy, it's Steve. You know, it just kind of went different places, but we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Got to work with some great people. He did, Al Burton did decide to use people from the old show, so Tommy Reddick did an episode, June Lockhart, yeah. Roddy McDowell, who I'd never met. What a great guy, you know, from the original series. I mean, the original movie, Last to Come Home. And Margaret O'Brien, mm-hmm. you know, from It's a Wonderful Life and other movies and stuff, I believe. And so it was great. And then, now I had a recurring role, so I wasn't in every episode. Uh-huh. So one of the episodes that I didn't get to be in, they had Leonardo DiCaprio. Leo. First thing, yeah. you know, he must have been like, you know, 12 years old, maybe, or something, 10 mm-hmm. or something. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of the other kids on the show. But, you know, that was crazy. And we did that for 2 years. And yeah. I got to work with Bob Weatherwax, Rudd's son. Mm-hmm. Rudd has passed. And so Bob continued on with the line of Lassies. And mm-hmm. to this day, I believe his daughter now has like the 12th, 13th generation original descendant from the real Lassie, from Al. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's pretty cool. But he's just been, you know, a family dog.
Yeah, until I was reading your book, I had seen that newer Lassie show and I'd totally forgotten about it because they don't show it very often. Do they show it now, to your knowledge? I mean,
no, it's because we only did 2 seasons.
Okay.
It's not enough for them to syndicate, and we didn't do 36 episodes a season. You know, I think we did like 12 of them.
Because I'd like to see him again, maybe.
But
yeah, seek him out.
You could possibly find episodes on YouTube.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple things about after you left the original Lassie. Okay, so I know the show continued because I remember seeing new episodes when I was a kid with a forest ranger, you know, and actually those kind of bugged me as a kid because I go, where's Timmy? Where's
And I don't know, you know, who decided to change or what their real reasons were, but the show's about a kid and a dog.
Yeah.
It can be a girl and it didn't have to be a boy.
Right.
But a kid could be in the city.
Yeah.
That would work. Could be even years ago. Oh, gosh, 20 years ago, June and I were talking about doing a remake of Lassie where she's on the farm. Grandma's been on the farm. Mm-hmm. Timmy left years ago, went to the big city, became a big lawyer, or a big doctor or something. Yeah. And now he wants to bring his kids back to the farm, you know, back to grandma. And we're thinking, oh, man, this sounds like a really good. Nobody, they said, nobody will watch it. Nobody will buy it. Everywhere we took that, nope, there's not a market for it. Now, if I'd been a serial murderer or something, you know, or, a puppy mill breeder, you know, they probably would have taken it. So who knows?
Here's an off the wall question, but it is around that same time. So you left the Lassie series, but in the book, and I didn't experience this firsthand, but I've seen a lot of these magazines around. You suddenly became like a teen idol, but you weren't really a singer. You weren't really a musician. You really didn't have any particular TV show at that point. I mean, why did you become this teen idol? And you hung out with like Davy Jones and stuff like that. It said, and Moses and, you know, who wrote that in Sal Mineo, you mentioned, and you know, things like that. You know, so what were those years like, and why were you considered a teen idol if you really weren't on anything?
You know, it all started, you know, when you turn 16, 17 years old, and because everybody knew Timmy, you know, so it was good. And, you know, why? Who knows? Like you said, I didn't really do that. I had an audition, though, in the Capitol Record Building, in Hollywood, because to see for a sing thing, to cut an album. Mm-hmm. No, you know, I that's not me. And the instrument thing, I tried at Disney. They were looking for a band. Mm-hmm. And so me and my two buddies that I kind of grew up with, Ron and Mike, who the parents weren't in the business, and Mike played the drums, Ron played the guitar, and I thought I played the bass, the electric bass. And so we put a little band together and went to Disney for an audition and like got booed out of the place. who knows why? And, you know, but yeah, like at that time, too, I was starting to go to the Sunset Strip, you know, and go and because of my notoriety, I was allowed to go to clubs where they maybe had an 18 limit or a 21 limit. And I wasn't that age, but you're drunk. Okay, you can come. And, you know, if it was 21, there was no way that, you know, alcohol would be sick. Anyway, that wasn't the big thing anyway. So, but, you know, the teen idol thing, all the Tiger Beat, you know, teen magazine, you know, the different ones, dozens and dozens, and even covers.
Yeah.
Who knows? And like you said, I wasn't really doing anything then.
Yeah.
The computer wore tennis shoes. That was the big thing.
Just do something occasionally and that propelled you. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah,
it's like we were talking about my friend Jay North.
Jay
did an album.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, And he goes, I don't even want
to
remember.
And I had to look up to see, because it seemed like everybody did an album. I said, surely John did an album. And it's like, no. Did you even do a single or anything?
I made it to the sixth floor of Capitol Records, but nothing happened. Hey, you know, you can't do it all.
I mean, if Leonard Nimoy can have albums, he certainly could have some.
I mean, oh my God, you know. Yeah.
Anyway. Oh boy. Let's see. Now, when you went to Sonoma, well, there's two things that you talk about in the book that, you know, you turned 21, so you got all the trust money because, you know, the child labor rules and everything. Right. You didn't pay you the full amount until you're a certain age, and certainly your family wasn't supposed to abscond with it, like Jackie Coogan, which is why we have the Jackie Coogan law and all that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, did you just go nutso and just spend it all, or what?
Well,
because
you
have a little shady period there, and if you want to talk about it, you can. You know, I mean, it's in the book.
You know, they're for one thing, my father, Depression era, you know, was super, super conservative, mm-hmm. more conservative than I wish he had been. Yeah. You know, and we, you know, we really at one point. I was in like a 62-63% tax range. When they used to, you know, it used to be crazy like that. Even though you weren't making that much money, it was how it was weird how they did it. I didn't really go crazy. I had left LA because for one reason, you know, like I really spent a lot of time going to the clubs and stuff on, you know, and like, you know, 67, 68, when it was just really good.
Yeah, I was going to say, you went to the right time.
It wasn't bad, you know, that hadn't happened. And then late 68, 69, you know, the bikers came in, unfortunately. And then, not that all bikers are bad, but the drugs, the heavy stuff started coming in, and it just got really dark. And I saw it all coming down, and I go, this guy grew up here. I didn't. And so that was another reason that I left. But that was before, you know, I turned 21. You know, yeah, I went out, you know, I bought the car and stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't go real crazy.
Okay.
And just, I think I'm more the conservative part of my father.
Yeah.
Kind of stuck with me, you know, like be frugal.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I didn't mean conservative in the other way. So.
Now, you mentioned a number of child actors that didn't make it, you know, because of various reasons, you know, like Rusty Hamer and Dana Plato and, you know, Trent Lehman and people like that that had young early deaths and stuff like that. How did you kind of escape all that? Or did you have to go into therapy like everybody else and kind of?
No, I saw it, you know, and like I mentioned earlier, I had two good friends growing up. And when I say growing up, it was like from, you know, 10 to 20. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good age to grow up and know somebody.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like my friend Mike, who I said played the drums, he just went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And I was living up here, and I remember coming down and visiting him. And just when he opened the door, my heart just boom, hit the floor because his eyes were gone. He was dead, you know. Mm. And then he was. And the next time there was no answer. But I could see how all that was happening. You know, I mean, the parties were getting really just outrageous and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's just that. I grew up on a farm. Give me a break.
Yeah.
So anyway, sure, there were bumps in the road.
Yeah.
There always are.
Right.
And that's, you know, part of that, those bumps are in that, the added portion to my autobiography, and I'm still here. And who knows, there's more to come. But I mean, you know, but just Matthew Perry, I mean, good Lord, you know, people struggle. I mean, struggle. We all struggle.
Right.
And unless And it doesn't matter what it is, where that struggle is, you know, because it's just, we have to learn from that, you know, and grow and, and, you know, hopefully with help or without, or however we can do it, get over that.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm glad there's people like your friend, Paul Peterson, who does a lot of activism work on that to kind of help people along if people are in crises.
You know, you mentioned Jay and just others, a lot of people in the Coogan Law mainly, you know, they're, you know, a lot of, and I saw it as a kid growing up where this kid all of a sudden would get a job and now he's making more money than dad's making. So dad goes, I'm going to quit my job and I'll be his manager. And all of a sudden, you know, the kid that's working ends up with nothing or very little. Thank God my parents were like that. You know, dad supported the family. That was very, very important for him. Now, he did have me do one thing. I bought both my brother and sister, who are older than I. My brother's 6 years he's passed. He was 6 years older. My sister is 4 years older. I bought them each their first car. Now, when they were 16. Okay, so now I'm 10 years old. I'm buying my brother his first car, which he got to pick out whatever he wanted. And then, you know, my sister, 2 years later, now I'm 12, I'm buying her first car when she's 16. Now, Mark, are you sitting down? I hope you are. And everybody else, because now, John, me, I turned 16. I can't have a car.
Wow.
I have to wait till I'm 18. Before I could get a car, buy my own car. But here's what my parents let me do. They let me buy a motorcycle when I was 16 instead of a car.
Okay, go figure.
I mean, I still don't get that. I don't know where they were, and my parents weren't drinkers, so you know, it wasn't because of. But they just You don't get a car until you're 18, but you can get a motorcycle.
Interesting.
Yeah. The logic.
I don't think my parents would have done that. They would have said, get the car.
Other side, it's like my father, who designed airplanes, right? My mother made him quit flying. I mean, he designs them, right? For the military and everybody, yet he had a plane. She made him quit flying because it was too dangerous. You know, I mean, wait, I don't. Mom, no, it's not too dangerous. And then all we ever did was just fly all over the world, you know, making movies and making appearances. So who knows?
So that kind of brings us to today. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you've done, and you know, but I guess, you know, nowadays you do like animal activism and then all these different shows, correct?
Been a big, you know, big
personal appearances. That's what
I've been a big, big supporter my entire life, my entire, you know, adult life. Supporting no kill shelters, supporting service dog organizations, you know, things like that. And yeah, we are entering a new place here. We're just launching a new business. It's under provosta.net, and it's for dogs. It's called Spray Mix and Go. It's a because it's really easy to use, and it's a CBD product that works for dogs to help them calm down. If you know you're going to the vet or you're going to grooming or anxiety separation. One thing too, you know, we've always tested our things that we're going to use on the animals. Well, this CBD thing has been tested on humans, not on animals. And it works for, you know, joint pain, for arthritic, things like that. But what makes ours more unique is that it's in a spray. It's not in a tincture form, so you don't have to get a dropper out and one drop, two drop. Each spray is a measured dose, and it's not habit forming. It doesn't sedate your dog, because what you get from the vet, you know, is drugs, the same kind of drugs we take, and you know, basically they're just sedating your dog. This doesn't do it. This does it in a natural way. And plus those drugs, you know, can kill your dog. This is not habit forming, non-addictive, and completely non-psychoactive. So it does nothing to his head at all. It just helps calm them down. And like I said, it's called Spray Mix and Go, and you can go to johnprovost.com or and my dog just came here. He's giving me some love. And this is our rescue. Aww. We've had him. This is Casper. We've had Casper for 4 months. He's 12 years old and he has no teeth.
He has a ton.
really suffers from anxiety separation. So on his food, when you're getting ready to leave, you just spray it on his food, mix it around, and go, and everybody's happy.
So interesting.
That's what we're up to now.
And, very cool.
It's great. And people just go to the website, either for the product, which is just Provost, the name, provost.net, or johnprovost.com, and find out information there.
Very cool. Now, we'll plug the book one more time. I'll hold it up since I have it. You know, it's Timmy's in the Well, the John Provost story by you.
And which Marie I never Jacobson. Did fall in a well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You didn't even know that never happened when you started writing the book.
I didn't. And, you know, I said we did 249 half-hour episodes.
Yeah.
My mom saved every script. So I really didn't know if I'd fallen in a well. I'd been in quicksand. I'd fallen in mine shafts. Off cliffs, you know, river, you name it. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe, so the first page of every script was a one-page synopsis of the whole story. Mm-hmm. Read everyone, did find the story that maybe two bad guys fell in an old abandoned mine, that had on our property. And of course, Lassie saved them. But never happened to Timmy. We think maybe June or somebody on the set came up with it. June doesn't remember. Nope, but everybody knows it and everybody says it. I mean, Colbert the other night even made mention. He goes, Timmy must be in the well. Yeah,
I'm always wondering if it was something that was said like on The Simpsons or on Beavis and Butthead or something, because there is a Beavis and Butthead where he gets stuck in a pipe.
That.
You know? Yeah.
It comes up everywhere, but it was definitely.
I certainly am not sure because, you know, I didn't memorize the shows. I just remember various things. And you did get in trouble quite a few times.
Oh.
And so, well, why not? Was,
Mark, if it hadn't been for Lassie, the kid never would have made it, you know? And that's another thing. Why did they, put Lassie with a forest ranger? And then they dropped the forest ranger, and it was just Lassie by himself.
I remember that too, what I saw first run.
But did you know that Lassie was, at one point, was the second longest running series?
Yeah.
Behind Bonanza was the longest, then Lassie, but now,
And then they made a cartoon series, which I watched.
And cartoons. DreamWorks owns what's called the Lassie Library, which is everything. DreamWorks owns that now, so maybe Spielberg, who knows what he's going to do. At one point, Lorne Michael owned it, and they were talking about doing a Lassie musical on Broadway.
If they did another movie or something, would you like to be involved even peripherally?
Sure, depending. I'll be the old grandpa. It's cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Hair is starting to go, but I can grow a beard. Oh, we can put some fake hair up there.
Yes, you can actually fall in a well. That'll be where you start out.
Give me some extensions or something. It'll work.
All right. I know you do public appearances and stuff. I mean, I saw you recently at San Jose Con. I think you were most recently at Bakersfield Con.
Yeah.
You do various appearances. Anything coming up in the next couple months or anything? You're taking a break or,
We're taking a break now. We just got home. We had to drive home 450 miles on New Year's Eve. It was not fun. no, it was not fun. I mean, I'm sorry, not Thanksgiving Eve, but yeah. It was not fun. No, we're home. We're staying here. Next year, I don't really have anything. But if it people just can go to my website, johnprovost.com, and it has, you know, where have where interviews are going to be or appearances. Yeah. And if we're in your town, you can leave a little note there with an address. And then if we're going to be near your town, we'll send you an email or a card or something to let you know.
Okay. And then you sell signed photos and all sorts of things on the
all that yeah
website. Awesome. Yeah.
And now we have our spray mix and go to sell too.
And of course, since I bumped into you again in person, you know, I got you both to sign the book. So there, thank you.
And definitely original there. Definitely original.
So you can get your signed book from the website. There we go.
we'll bump into each other again at one of the shows for sure. Yes. You know, I remember when they were called autograph shows.
Yes, yeah. And I've been to those too, but I like the ones that have other things than just autographs
I love the cons. It's great to walk the different comic cons. I mean, because if nobody's ever been, you've got to go. I mean, it's not just comics, it's everything, and people dress up and it's crazy. Great place to find stuff. I find all kinds of stuff for the grandkids, you know. And if you're into Star Wars or any of that kind of stuff, you're missing it. Yeah. And then they throw in some of us and people go, wow, I didn't know you were going to be here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what I like. You go to a toy show and then, hey, you know, there's somebody I know. And you mentioned Butch Patrick. I met him at one of the toy shows. You know, I met Cindy Williams once. I met the two of the ladies from Three's Company over the, you know, just lots of people over the years. So, you know, it's.
Oh, yeah. Fun. No, it's it's worth it. And, you know, you're saying it yourself. It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, so and that's why we do it. That's why I do it. I know sometimes you're someplace and you see that person that they're not having fun doing this. Then why are they here? If you're not having fun, don't do it.
Yeah. So. And then I'll give one more plug for your wife's book because it's
she will love that.
Top of the Mountain. The Beatles at Shea Stadium.
Amazon, go grab it.
And I will say, because you probably don't know this, I agreed, and I'm saving the money right now, to go on Charles F. Rosnay's Liverpool trip, which he's done for over 40 years. I've never gone. I don't want to be Lori 95 when I go on a trip somewhere. So I'm trying to go out there now. So that'll be next August.
About that.
Yeah. So if you're interested, I could send you a link and, you know, maybe we can all go on the same trip.
That's one place she wants to go. They're in Ireland, close by.
Very cool. Okay. Well, John, it was a pleasure talking with you again and getting to know you better. Yeah, because I've seen you over the years and I probably said, hi, and then please sign my book. You know, and that's about it, you know.
So, well, and we change, you know, things change.
Yeah. All right, and hope to see you again sometime, and Lori as well.
Good. And everybody,
I thank you very much, and that wraps it up for another episode of the Fun Ideas Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, John Provost, for being my special guest. Remember, you can always watch the video version of this episode on YouTube. Episode number 243 will be coming soon. If you would like to comment and or be a guest on this podcast, please drop me a line at funideas.mark@gmail.com. Become a patron of Mark Arnold and Fun Ideas Productions. If everyone listening just contributed $1 a month, that would be a tremendous help in continuing the production of my books and this podcast. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel. The opening and closing music for the Fun Ideas Podcast is provided courtesy of Andrew the Slow Poisoner Goldfarb and is used with permission. This has been the Fun Ideas Podcast. This is Mark Arnold speaking. This episode is copyright 2022, Fun Ideas Productions. Thank you, and good night.